Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 19th, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know, last night I went to the movies with some of my family members. Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, you saw Planet of the Apes? 30 minutes or less is much better.
I gotta tell you that I am a little disappointed. I thought it was going to be a movie about regulation of online poker and then the return of our poker series, Rise of the Apes. When I got there, it's a bunch of monkeys running around, no bananas. And James Franco, who... clearly, he's not a good actor yet. He still gets nominated for an Academy Award sometimes.
He's such a good actor, you don't know that he's a good actor.
But I was totally disappointed. I mean, I was looking for, you know, Barney Frank to be running around the screen. None of that happened.
Yeah, you know, hey, that happens in movies. You just never know.
It's a good movie, though. They really did tie in, like, if for anybody who's seen the originals and everything, I mean, they tied in the whole how they got the surviving humans, you know, to Mars, and then, you know, but it's all subtle and stuff, and then how they erase the planet of humans, and it was all subtle. You know, you think it's going to be, you know, how do these apes, you know, kill all these humans, or how do they take, but the way they do it, it kind of, you know, I mean, some of it's obviously far-fetched, but it was kind of a cool movie. I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I did.
Well, that's good. That's good, because that was the preview movie at 30 minutes or less. And my wife and I turned to each other and went, yeah, not gonna see that.
See, now the problem is that it should have said 30 minutes or fewer. Then I may have considered watching it, but once they hack the English language, I...
Yeah, but see, they have to be correct with the proper usage of pizza companies. No pizza company ever says 30 minutes or fewer, even though that would be correct, so... They can't win.
Well, at the top of the show, you heard me say the best, and there's a reason for that. We win! Yay!
We are the best, at least according to checkraise.com.
That's right.
Which I think is the definitive source of podcast ratings.
Absolutely. It is right now. Anyone else holding a contest? I don't think so.
I know I read that on Wikipedia somewhere, so...
And you know Wikipedia always has facts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where I go first. That's where I learned that the apes and Planet of the Apes are real. But no, seriously, we appreciate everyone who went to checkraise.com and voted, and of course the good folks at checkraise.com for even having this.
We
can actually try to get recognized because, you know, as we mentioned, we're not going to win these other ones that are run by companies that are in direct competition with.
And it was funny because I thought, you know, they're just going to say what the top five vote getters were, and they did, but they said that we clearly won. We had more votes than anybody, and we ruled the roost. So I'm pretty excited about that. We love you guys. Thank you for voting for us, taking the time to do it.
Yeah, and look at the shows that we beat.
Yeah.
You'll have to go to checkraise.com to see them because we're not going to encourage you to go listen to other shows. But rest assured that we'd be some good competition. Or
yeah, yeah. You know, and I was I saw where they had remarked on this, too, on Twitter, and they had said how we won on Twitter and stuff. And then, like, Bart Hansen puts up a retweet of it, and he's like, yeah, I wonder what others are thinking about this, you know. And then someone else put in there and said, I wouldn't pay to listen to any of these five shows. And so I typed in... good thing we're free, I guess.
You'll be absolutely pleased then.
And then, of course, that person said, ah, nice comeback. So,
see,
we're witty, so maybe he will start listening to us now.
We're witty as well.
But it's nice. It's nice to win something again. And now we can send that out with all of our media kits to advertisers saying we're the best show ever.
Absolutely.
They'll want to be on our show.
Of course.
Speaking of Twitter, I was fumbling around in there and just reading some of the stuff because some funny stuff's on there, and I noticed that we were having a Papes event the other night, and I was like, oh my god! So Jean's flying in. She went out of town for a little while, and she was flying in, but she wasn't going to come in until like midnight. And the Papes event was at 9, and I'm like, hey, what's the event? And No Limit used a 7 single draw. I said, you know what? I'm going to play. These guys are going to be like, what the hell? Because, I mean, I haven't done anything. I haven't played online poker in like, what, months and months? Over three months.
Probably since, you know, April 15th.
Yeah. So I was like, this is going to be cool, you know? And I go to show you how long it's been since I even looked at my Poker Stars icon. I had to, you know, blow some dust off of it. And then when I clicked it, it's like, yeah, you can't use this software anymore, buddy. You got to load the PokerStars.net software. I was like, oh, my God. I can't play for play money with the real money? You know, nope, sorry. And so it was like 8:57. And I'm like, oh, my God, I still got to download the software. So I'm rushing like a madman to get it downloaded. And sure enough, I made it right when they were registering, like right when they were butt seated at 9 o'clock. I sat down. And it was a lot of fun playing No Limit Deuces 7 single draw again. You know, I mean, in a tournament setting, it's so much more different than a cash game. It's just, it is. But I sat there and just kept waiting for a hand and then doubling up and then waiting for a hand and then doubling up. Instead of like just, you know, that's all I did. I would wait for a hand, shove, and then they would think that I was drawing, so they would have a better draw, they would think, and then I would stay pat and then they would draw. But I couldn't tell you how many times I got pipped. It was hilarious. I would have 10-9-8-7 or something. They'd have 10-9-8-6. I mean, it happened a lot. More than I'm comfortable with, to be honest with you. And but I have a question for you. What happens when you make a certain position in a tournament that you receive something in exchange for that position, but it's not actually money? What do you call that? Do you call it a cash? Because, ladies and gentlemen, yes, I made the final table. Good to know that some things never change. And I cashed. I finished third in this event. Gambit, by the way, won it, beating out Tuck.
It's a bastard game.
Now, it was actually Bit Guru playing as Tuck Man or Tuck something or whatever. So, but him, Bit Guru and Gambit went heads up, and when I got knocked out in third, Big Guru had a chip lead, so it looks like Gambit had to come back to beat him, and he did. He won the Papes event, but it was a lot of fun playing with them. But really, Scott, what do you call it when you give them fake money and then you win back fake money? Is it not called a cash, right? What do you call it?
Well, I guess you'd have to call it a play.
So yeah, I played. No, because I played anyway. Right?
No, but it's, you know, it's like a rapper thing. Hey, I played. You know, it has multiple meanings.
All right, so I played in third.
I had a play. It, you know, it's not played.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, I...
But then you're right. You can't use the other
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to say about this, but I finished third, exciting. I faked?
Yeah.
I faked third.
I faked in Papes last night.
Oh, man.
I have 7 fakes on Papes this year.
That's classic, man. That is so good. But it was a lot of fun. It was great playing with the guys again, and you know, Poker Geek, and a lot of the regulars were there having fun. And it was, you know, there's only like 9,000 people in the tournament, so I was a little disappointed. But you know, to finish third was pretty good. You know, I mean, I was having, you know, I think it was 2 tables actually. We had 2 table tournaments. So I was impressed with that actually.
I was initially going to razz you a little bit for saying you made the final table when it looked like it started with just a final table, but I forgot that it was single draw.
Yeah,
and so because there were only 8 or 9 people,
so I did have to survive some people to make the final table, and I made it third. I was really hoping to get heads up with someone and try to win a Papes title, but it didn't work out. So, and I was saying in the chat box with the guys, I was like, so, you know, you don't win a plastic banana. Maybe you win a paper mache banana, you know, because it's paper. I mean, you know, play. I was trying to figure out what kind of banana we can win, give Gambit, because we're playing with them on Friday. But
this is what's funny about that is we already were giving away fake bananas to the actual Apes winners.
I know.
So I don't know what the next step down from a fake banana is.
It could be like a hologram.
Or yeah, what about like just like a printout of a banana from a website or
printout.
Something?
Printout. Yeah, it's paper, you know. Paper
machine. Certainly save on postage.
Maybe we can get into that. What's that origami? You know, we'll take paper and fold it into a banana. And well, anyway, it was a lot of fun, and I'm so glad that they're still running stuff like that and getting together and chatting and having a good time with each other. And just reminds me that we still built a pretty strong community, regardless of it being for money or not. So it was cool. So I had a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Great. And, you know, we had a lot of fun on the show a couple weeks ago when we talked about these new TDA rules. And, you know, we had a spirited discussion, as we often do, about some of these rules. And our good friend Nick, who joined us on that show, wrote in after hearing that discussion and offered a couple opinions and a couple clarifications. So what is the big clarification? Clarification is probably the wrong word, right?
Right, just
further explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the rule number 5, special needs. You know, we mentioned we wondered whether this was about addressed our Bernice Q's deaf player question or not. And this is what he wrote. He says he said he believed that this was for players that have poor eyesight, for example, and might need to be seated in the 5 or 6 seats so they can see the cards better. And he said there was even a discussion once about not having enough room at a table for 10 players, as several of them are 300-plus pounds.
Huh.
Just to give you an idea of an extreme situation where exceptions would have to be made. So, yeah, I guess that's a couple things I didn't think about.
You
see that all the time here in Florida. Hey, I can't see the cards. But it's only in cash games. In the tournaments, you know, hey, they're SOL, as you would like to say.
Or as dealers at the World Series like to say. Okay, warning. Here's where I editorialize. Warning. So I can imagine, you know, walking into like the local poker room and the tournament director grabbing the mic and saying, "All right, I can see by the size of some of you guys that we're gonna have to make this a 6 max tournament." So to accommodate all you, it's gonna be 6 max today rather than 10 handed. So.
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever been at a table where I was completely squished, but there have been tables I've been at where there have been some big boys and some big girls.
Yeah.
And I always kind of think it's funny when it's always like me there in my 4 square inches of space that I have. I'm like, dealer, can we square up the table?
Yeah.
And the dealer's like, we could try. What we need to do is maybe square meal off the table.
Square meal.
You know, it's just you can't move something that can't move, so I don't really know what you do at that point, but I mean, I guess that's what the discussion was about, so maybe it was just to kind of give the tournament director a little leeway there to do what they need to do. You know, I'm not sure what I think about the eyesight thing.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm compassionate about people whose eyes are declining. Mine certainly are. I went to the eye doctor this week, and, you know, I'm not seeing any better.
Right.
So at some point, I'm going to be one of these guys that is going to, you know, race to the table with my rascal so I can get my seat 5 or seat 6. But in a tournament, you know, at what point do you decide whether somebody is really having an eyesight problems or when somebody is just angling for a better spot at the table?
That's a
good
question.
A competitive standpoint, you know? Hey, I know that guy is aggressive. I want to be on one side of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have like those little eye tests there in the poker room. You know, hey, cover your right eye and read the 7th line. And if you can't, then all right, you get to sit in seat 5.
Well, maybe that's something where if they accommodate the person, it has to be done before the tournament starts. And then they carry that throughout. So they can't say, I don't want to sit on this one because, you know, they have to have it from the beginning to the end. And they have like a sort of you know, they tell the dealers, hey, this player right here, if he's at your table and he comes to your table. You know, he was already saying that
if I'm in seat 5 and I've been there forever and I like my seat and all of a sudden, Joe Eyesight shows up and takes my seat and then I get to move to 9, that doesn't seem fair to me.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I guess there's some way around
it. But I know what you mean. Keeping it consistent.
Right.
Oh, I can see at this table, but I can't see at that table. You know, no BS. You know, either you can see or you can't see. So I don't know. I mean, I'll be interested the first time I hear a tournament director actually making a concession like that and hearing his or her
their solutions. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's just
why they did it and how they solved it in a way that wasn't fair.
I've got short eyes. I can't see.
You know, again, it's like all these things. I mean, you know, handicaps are brutal.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's no winning in these situations. So I'm not offering a better solution than this. I just think it's an uncomfortable situation, and that's probably why it was brought up, right?
Yeah. No, I guess so. All right. Well, one of the other ones he mentioned was asking to see a hand. He says, "Gentlemen, I see no way that this rule protects the integrity of the game. On the contrary, if two or more players at a table were considering some form of collusion or chip dumping, what would be better than not having to show your cards at the end? This is another one I don't like. If I'm at the table and I want to see a called hand, why does it have to be under the conditions that I suspect collusion? Ridiculous. I have seen the privilege taken away from players because it was abused. But for the most part, in my opinion, players have a right to see a called hand. 10 million people are watching on TV, but I can't see the player's hand, and I'm in the game." So I see what he's saying there.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with my friend Nick.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to disagree with him? We get him all riled up?
Yeah, I think we're allowed to disagree. As long as we don't have to have his retort again on the show next week and have it 6 weeks long that we're running about talking about the same rule.
Well, I mean, I imagine there's other people that agree with Nick, too. And here's my thing. You are more than welcome to see my hand. You have the right, if you're dealt into that hand, to see my hand by calling all my bets down to the river.
Yep.
If you don't want to call my bets down the river, then, hey, too bad. You have an option where you get to see my hand, so... Why should you get it for a discount?
Right. Was he arguing about other people too in the hand that aren't in the hand asking to see if it was called? I'm just trying to
reading what you read what he said. So what I'm assuming. I mean, that's what it comes up with is you know, these situations at the end of the hand, somebody that wasn't in at the end goes, "I want to see that hand, dealer."
Yeah, that's right.
And
no, you don't get that.
A bad dealer turns it over, and a good dealer calls the floor. And, you know, I'm sorry. I just if it's that important that you see the hand, then you pay the fee.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you suspect collusion, and you call it out, and you say that, "Hey, I think Nick's cheating. Let me see that hand."
Yep.
I really don't see what the problem here is. You know, but you know, I will say this. He makes an interesting point about TV now. That you know, people at home can see it, but he can't see it if he's actually there. I mean, I guess it's really not a similar situation because at home it's like we're not watching it live. You know, best for watching it near live.
right.
You know, the information you gain from seeing that hand, you apply right then. So you know, if you see the hand 6 months later, I mean, it's a completely different story, but.
Right, we're not participating. That is hardly an argument for being able to see cards. We're not participating as viewers, so we're not gaining information or gaining any kind of edge against a player. We're watching on TV, so that it's like apples and oranges there. I mean, I understand what he's saying, but it's not. You're not in the game, so that's right. You are in the game. That's why you're not seeing the cards, and we're not in the game, and that's why we are. It's entertainment, and it's not for money. We're not making any cash by watching you play cards, but they are. So it just doesn't really compare. So. At least to me.
Now, I guess he's also talking about a called hand at the end, so really both of those hands should be turned up anyhow, right?
Yeah, I mean,
so it's probably a real narrow interpretation we have here, but... All right, well then, finally, he's chiding you a little bit, my good friend, and anybody that chides Chris is a worthy human in my book. As I tell you, it's tough for me to keep up with everything I need to be making fun of you for.
So are you saying that people who don't chide me aren't human or aren't worthy humans?
It could be apes, yeah.
Just be careful, my friend.
All right, so Dick wants to say, please don't fold without a bet in front of you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He was polite about it.
Yeah, at least he used the word please. He was please.
He says, folding when facing a check is the move of a complete novice.
Hmm.
In parentheses, he said, "I'm trying to get my message to you." Message received. Chris is a complete novice. All right, so he said it's one of the most worst moves any player at the table can make ever. Now, he gave a good explanation here, I think. And he says he explains the whole situation to his students like this, is using seven-card stud as an example. three players in the hand. Player A is high with no pair, but his ace gives him the right of first action. Player B has a very intimidating board, like 10, jack, queen, king of hearts, for example. And you have a full house and only fear player B, obviously. The betting round begins with player A checking. Player B folds. And now you're comfortable making a bet because player B gave no protection to player A. If B had checked the way he should have, there's a strong possibility that you might not bet because you might get raised.
Yes, that is definitely a good example. First of all, I wanted to be clear here. I don't do this. Okay, all I did was defend the right to do it. If I don't want to play the hand, you know what I mean? I understand, but I was thinking of Hold'em, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's a good example. And I've always felt that you should never fold when it's your turn and it's checked to you. But I was just defending the right to do it. But I guess his example, especially in stud, his example is much more clear and deserving of the rule. So I have to agree with that.
And I think on a smaller degree that can happen in Hold'em too. I mean, obviously stud is a really, really good example. But even in Hold'em, you can't see any cards, but you know tendencies of players.
Yeah.
So if I know there's a player that is real likely to check raise me, and he checks out, then I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, and you know, and the other thing too is that you've literally thinned the field for the person now to only have to beat one person.
Right.
In his mind, he knows he only has to beat one player now instead of two, so he might make a bet. And so yeah, no, I agree, and I've never condoned checking out like that, and I don't do it. I've never actually done it myself.
You check out all the time, man.
Yeah, I do.
Just
I
check out
of hotels, but but no, really, I don't do it. Clearly, I don't do it.
You're on a roll this week.
Yeah, but you know what? They let you do it online. That's the thing. They let you fold online when it's checked to you if you want. Like even the Papes tournament, the fold button was there, yeah. And I could have folded if I wanted to. When it got
checked. Well, I mean, it's technically.
Technically what?
Well, see, I think it's technically allowed.
But we just said this rule now isn't. That's what the rule's there for, to say that it's not technically allowed anymore.
That's a good point.
But it is online.
It could be assessed a penalty, it says, right?
See, that's weird. I hate stuff that's left over interpretation. Then it's not a rule. Yeah. Rules are rules, not interpretations. So, but I don't want to talk anymore about it. He's right, because if we just keep doing this, it's going to be a regular segment on the show for this next six more years. So let's just, I agree with what he said, and I don't think people should check out check fold and whatever. And it was good. It was great. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for writing in.
All right, so our mailbag this week comes from South Carolina. Paul up there, a very long time listener, he says, Chris.
Yeah, that's good.
I never know when they say very long time. Does that mean that it takes them a long time to listen to each show? Or have they been listening since the beginning?
That reminds me of, like, you know, when they say, hey, did you know that you had a, you know, forget it. I don't want to finish that sentence. Never mind.
Good story.
I'm not
the
finishing
one had
that.
To end somewhere. It ended at 11:26 a.m. This is what Paul writes in. He says, it's been almost 3 months since Black Friday, and I have not played a hand since. I think we're a little late on getting this letter on the air. Right? so he hasn't played a hand since Black Friday is the takeout here, Chris.
Okay.
He says he's living in South Carolina. His options are limited. Closest poker room is in the mountains of North Carolina on electronic tables 3 hours away. Jacksonville, Florida is 6 hours away. Bar leagues are illegal. My old poker group meets every 6 years, and we are 2 years late for our next meeting. My question is, how do you find a poker group for a home game? I don't think running up and down Walmart aisles asking randoms where the big game is the way to go. So any suggestions? And he says, P.S., by the way, playing cards at home is technically illegal in South Carolina also.
Well, I know that I think you emailed him about. I know they're actually there. We recommended the Aquasino, right? The ship right off the
first thing is it's a great little ship that goes out of Myrtle Beach. I don't know where in South Carolina our friend Paul lives, but it's got to be closer than
Jacksonville
and Cherokee. And, yeah. So I would suggest that. And it gets a pretty good tournament going on Tuesday nights, from what I understand, and the cash games as well, too. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Right. And this is a much larger scheme thing now. We're trying to make everybody understand how they can do it if they don't have poker, too, because they don't all have an option that's hanging off the shore like that. So there's home game sites, too, right, that people have where you just – it's like home game, you know, homegames.com or something. I don't know, but you can Google it. Isn't there like a home game site?
Yeah, there are a number of resources on the web. I mean, you know, I know the meetup.com that does meetups for all kinds of activities. They usually have poker meetups. And then, of course, you know, you got forums, and there are lots of places on the internet you can find a game. My concern is, and I'll play the role of mom and dad here, is I much prefer to try to build a game from people I know. And sometimes it's just not easy. Yeah. You know, if you don't have any coworkers that play, or you don't have any friends that play, or it's not going to work. But, you know, I've never played in a home game with strangers. And I don't think I ever want to. Now, of course, I'm saying that from a point of view of having plenty of poker nearby my house where I can go play, and, you know, a good solid home game that we do as well, too. So it's easy for me to say that, but I don't know. I'm apprehensive about getting into a game with strangers.
I couldn't agree more. I know that in the old days, they didn't have a choice. You know, if they wanted to make a living and play poker, they went, you know, and they went and there were machine guns on the roof, you know. But in this day and age, you know, there are so many options that I would just rather travel to if I could, you know. But I think that, you know, you go to work, you know, and if you work with other people, you know, hey, you guys, you know, like poker, or, you know, I think that, and I don't know if I, you know, speaking for them or not, but I remember Gambit's home game, a lot of them were his work buddies.
Yeah.
You know, even ours started out mostly with our work buddies, right? I know it grew out, so, from some of the listeners in the show and stuff, but I think Gambit's was like that, too, and some of the guys may have just wanted to learn the game and then played and got better as they played in the home game more regularly, so, you know, it's a good way to make new friends or to you know, whatever, and then, even then, too, if they don't know how to play, you tell them you can teach them how to play or whatever, and, you know, you can start winning some of that money for a while, too, you know, until they get better. But I thought that was a good way to do it, right? You go to your coworkers.
I'd go all in. That's what I would do. I'm Mr. Aggressive.
Yo. See, now, if you had three sixes. but no, really, right? Isn't that the coworkers?
Yeah, and I would say it goes beyond work, too. I mean, any kind of social group or situation you're in.
Yeah, church group.
Yeah, there you go. Get Father Paul to play.
Yeah, Father Paul plays, so why can't your fellow churchgoers?
But so, yeah, I mean, and if, you know, hey, I'm not active in any groups, well, maybe this is your opportunity to get active in a group that's not poker related, just to meet some new people. And, you know, hey, by the way, hey, this is boring tonight. You want to go play some cards?
Yeah, right. You know? Right. You know, I've heard this one from the pastor. Let's go play some No Limit. You go on Facebook, too, even Facebook, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
And you got a lot of friends on Facebook who, you know, can vouch for other friends or something so that you don't have to worry about the risk of
getting robbed. Yeah, that's a good point, is that, you know, you don't have to feel like you need to fill this whole game yourself with people you know. You know, as long as you can find another person that likes to play and that person brings someone, then, you know, they're still strangers to you, but they're strangers related by friendship.
Right. Right. It's like 6 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I'm far more comfortable with that. You know, when I was saying before, I just don't want to walk into a game where I know nobody and don't know, you know, anything about anyone. That's a little daunting.
Right.
Particularly in a state where it's illegal to play. So.
Absolutely. That's a lot of solutions, though. That's a lot of ways to try to get a game going if you don't have any options, you know, that are reasonable driving distance from your house.
Of course, you can always move to Florida or Pennsylvania or Delaware.
Yeah.
Nevada, California,
yeah,
Mississippi,
Oklahoma,
New Hampshire,
Oklahoma,
Iowa, any of these great states that allow you to play poker.
Yep.
All right, well, Paul, I don't know if we help you find a home game, but we will send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com. Maybe they have a Got Poker shirt, Chris. And then you can wear that to Walmart, and then people will come up to you going, no, I don't got poker. You know where I can get poker? And you can say, why, yes, I'm looking to get poker myself. Why don't we get poker together?
South Carolina is a four-letter word. Sorry, okay. Hey, you know, our hotline is 813-448-1120, and we don't have a call this week, and yet we do have a call this week. We'll explain later. But, you know, if you call that hotline number and we use the clip, and we had never used a clip from you before, we'll give you something really cool, like an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. You can only win the uncut sheets. You can't buy them. But you can buy the cards themselves on our store, Annie Up Store, at annieupstore.com. Right, Scott?
That's correct. And you mentioned that we don't have a hotline clip this week, but we do have an audio call the floor.
Yes.
I always feel like Alex Trebek.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
An audio call the floor. it comes from Ryan from Colorado, who is on like every show. And we appreciate that because he is always offering good stuff to talk about.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
He's our new content partner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's hear the situation that he had.
When action gets skipped use, it's happened to me a few times where I'm in the big blind, and before I have the opportunity to check or bet, the dealer throws down part of the flop, or I'm on the button or last to act, say it's after the flop, for the turn, the river, etc., and everybody checks around, and the dealer's not paying attention and throws down that next card before I had the opportunity to make a bet. Wondering what's supposed to happen there. I got in a situation a few weeks ago where kind of started a table argument about what should have happened, what I should have been able to do, because I was going to bet, and I didn't get the opportunity to do so.
Well, this one, like all issues, Chris, is easy to answer, and Jody can do it in four words. You just chose to use 400.
But it's good to be thorough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated issue, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you want to, you know, go get a bite to eat, you know, or it's going to take a while for us to get through this, believe it or not. But, Scott, why don't you start us off?
All right. Here's what Jody said. This gentleman is asking about the procedure that should be followed when a dealer puts out the next card or the flop before every player has had a chance to act on their hand. This is referred to as premature burn and turn. Kind of sounds like a punk band, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Actually, two of them. Hey, we're premature. Coming up next, burn and turn. All right, so premature burn and turn is what it's called. It says the mistake has a universal fix that should be used in every card room around the world. It's quite simple. Since a player or players haven't had a chance to act, the premature card or flop must come back, but in a very precise way. What is that precise way, Chris?
Yeah, he says, important note, once this mistake is made, the dealer should always call a foreperson to make this decision. Since it is the same fix every time, some dealers will try to fix the problem without calling for a foreperson, and sometimes well-intentioned players will try to assist. This is adding one mistake on top of another. If a dealer has prematurely burned and turned, then obviously their mind isn't where it needs to be. You certainly don't want them trying to fix their own mistake when they aren't thinking clearly. As a player, you shouldn't allow this. You should insist on a foreperson at the table to walk the dealer through this scenario. You should ensure the correct this should ensure the correct procedure is followed, and it will help put minds at ease of new players who may be unsure of what is happening.
All right, so let's address a premature flop first. Okay. It might be Beavis and Butthead, but it's hard for me not to laugh when I hear premature.
Yeah, you're immature, I think, for laughing at premature.
All right, premature flop. He says, the object of the floor person making the decision is to keep as much of the deck intact that is possible without giving an unfair advantage to the player who has yet to act. The player who has not acted must be given a chance to act. Since it would be unfair for them to know what the flop must be shuffled back into the deck once the player has acted, then a new flop will be dealt. The only card that should not be shuffled back into the deck is the burn card. That card is the correct burn for the flop, and no one knows what that card is, making it the only part of the deck that can be preserved in the original sequence.
He says, if the burn and turn occurs on the turn, or we should say 4th Street, just not to confuse anybody...
Turning.
The foreperson will instruct the dealer to move the premature turn card aside, keeping it face up, and will explain to the table that that card is no longer part of the board. that it will be put back into the deck prior to the river being dealt and will have a chance to come back out at that time. Once all action on the flop is complete, the floor person will instruct the dealer to burn a card and deal a new turn card. Following this exact procedure keeps as much of the deck intact as possible, including the burn cards. By burning, then dealing a new card, this causes the original river card to now become the turn card. What you now have is the correct burn and flop, the correct burn card for the turn, the correct burn card for the river, and the correct river card as the turn. The only card that may change is what would have been the original turn card. Once action on the turn is complete, the floor person will instruct the dealer to shuffle the original turn card that was prematurely dealt back into the deck, then deal a river card with no burn. There is a 44-1 chance the original burn card will return to the board as the river card. That's as good as it can get in this situation, and not bad odds, actually. I wouldn't drive my car if I knew there was a 44-1 chance of getting into an accident. The dealer should be very cautious here not to expose any of the cards that remain in the deck. This means including everything, including straightening out the deck, should be done with the cards face down on the table surface.
Whew, you got the long paragraph.
Yeah, I realized that halfway through when I started dreading
it. All right. He says, a premature burn and turn on the river is a quick fix that, again, should always be handled by the floor person. The premature card is removed from the board until action is complete. The card is then shuffled back into the deck, and new river card is dealt with no burn. And he says, one of the things to watch for in this situation is a player who hasn't acted but begins to insist they were going to check anyway. This is almost always a sign that they like the premature card they see and don't want them to disappear. Always insist on the correct procedure being followed here no matter what. Also be aware of the floor staff who come over to make this ruling by asking the dealer if they know what to do and walking away. The floor person should always stay at the table with the completion of the hand to help prevent the dealer from making more mistakes.
Now, I'm so glad that we read this rule and learned of how and what they do, because here's what I want to say, Scott. Now, you ready for this?
I'm ready for you to say it.
You remember this huge discussion we had about destiny and
yes.
Random cards? Yet how come they take such painstaking steps to make sure that the original river and burn and everything stay intact, and only the prematured card is the one that gets shuffled in and rechanged? Why do we have to then do all the original burns and turns in the right order when, hey, it's all random anyway? You see what
I'm
saying?
Because there are so many people in poker rooms just like you, Chris.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. If there's a rule for it, then how can there not be a rule for the other things? And people were arguing about the randomness and how it doesn't matter, but here it matters. And it's in a rule. It's so weird to me that those things aren't consistent, or at least feelings aren't consistent about it. You know, I don't know. Anyway, but it's a great explanation, and he totally takes us right through it step for step, and I'm glad he did. But just to me, it sounds like, holy cow, this makes sense to me, because you should do that. Those are the cards that are supposed to come out. It's not, you know, otherwise, why did we even have burns and turns and why isn't he just grab into the middle of the deck and grab any card he wants and turn it over? You know, there's a procedure to things, and that's what that is. And to me, I love it. I love this rule.
Well, and the best part of this, I think, is the last paragraph where he talks about, you know, people saying, oh, don't worry about it. I was just going to check anyway. Because I see that all the time when this happens. And I think most of the time it's nothing nefarious. It's just someone saying, hey, you know, I was going to check. No big deal. Let's just, you know, let's not waste any time. And I think people generally will go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good reminder of why you shouldn't.
Yeah.
That it's kind of a closeted angle shoot.
Yep.
Angle shot.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I was just going to check anyway. Well, great. Now we know exactly what's going to be, why should I raise with my pocket kings when there are two aces on the board now? Or, you know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. No, it's great. And I love the rule. I think it's absolutely right, too, like you said, to bring a floor person over. Because, you know, people might say, oh, the dealer is, you know, friends with this guy, and that's why he didn't want a floor person to come over or whatever. No, you have to insist that it's done properly and that someone who is supposed to know the rules even more than the dealer or the decisions needs to be there to police it. So I applaud the way the rule is set, and I think it's great. I think it's a great thing.
And I think it's a good – this is why I like playing in good rooms too, because you don't have to be the heavy as a player. I mean, I think that's what people don't like. Is, you know, speaking up, hey, you know, I know you just wanted to check, but there's a procedure, and I think we should handle it. Dealer, can you call the floor over? And then you have people upset at you, right?
Yeah.
in a good room, the dealer will say, hey, you know, I appreciate the fact that you were going to check anyhow, but, you know, I made a mistake, and we have a procedure in this room, and we're going to follow it. That's what I'd like to get to in most rooms.
Absolutely.
We're just about a week and a half away from our next cruise, Chris.
Exciting stuff.
Yep. And you can't get on that one. Sorry. We're sold out. Just remember the winter Antioch Poker Cruise out of New Orleans, December 10th through the 17th, 7-nighter, stopping Mexico, Jamaica, Grand Cayman. Say it all together with me, folks. You know it all. Free class from Lee Childs, women's event sponsored by the Lips Tour, much more. Go to antiupmagazine.com, and while there, go ahead and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, plus us on Google, whatever else things that we should be on.
Plus us on Google.
Link us up on LinkedIn. We're everywhere now.
All right. Well, last week we had an O'Malley's move, and I'm starting to like this stuff again. You know, I like
that's
the
good. I'm sure O'Malley's happy to hear that you're starting to like it now.
Well, I mean, it's nice
I liked
to
it in the beginning.
But. It's nice to have someone analyzing something with me, and not putting all the pressure on me too. So let's hear the first part again, and then we'll have some reaction.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at a quarter-50-cent Nolim at Hold'em friendly home game. There are 7 people at the table, and we've had a roller coaster of a night. Nearly doubling up early, but have since squandered that away and are now down nearly $50. We just lost a big pot to a 6-outer on the river, so we're not in a great mood, and our judgment is a bit cloudy. The blinds post, and it gets folded around to us in the cutoff. We look down at the queen-ten of hearts. In a shorthanded game, and a little frustrated after some horrific beats and a frigid deck, this may as well be pocket aces. We make a standard 4x raise to $2, leaving us $58.50 behind, hoping to take the pot down right here. To add insult to injury, the button, who was the beneficiary of the rivered 6-outer, raises us to $6, leaving him $141.25 behind. It's folded back around to us, and to say that we are steaming would be a gross understatement. We don't know this opponent well, although this is our regular home game. This is his first time, so all we have to go off is the 3 hours we've been playing so far. But from what we can tell, he's fairly new to Hold'em, and has been on a bit of a card rush. He plays fearlessly, and seems to know the game fairly well, even for a new player. But his one drawback is that he plays way too loose. Normally, given our position, this hand would hit the muck quickly. But due to recent events and our new personal vendetta, courtesy of the suckout fresh on our mind, we have a lapse in good poker judgment and call the $6. The pot is $12.75, and to our delight, the flop comes Queen of Spades, 9 of Hearts, 8 of Hearts. We lost track of our game for a moment, but got rewarded with a great flop. We have top pair and all kinds of draws. We check here, putting our opponent on a hand like Ace-King or Jacks, and are entirely ready to pounce when his aggression rears its ugly head. But to our surprise, he checks right behind us. This confuses us a bit. We were fully expecting a bet, and now we feel like we just missed an opportunity to bet for value. Or is he slow playing a monster? The turn makes things even more complicated when it falls the 10 of clubs. So there's $12.75 in the pot, and the fourth straightening card just gave us top two. Are we betting here? And if so, how much?
You want me to begin?
Sure.
You always make me begin.
Well, I could begin.
And then you mock me for my...
Well, I could begin.
Yeah, no, that's right. I'll begin.
We can stop. No, don't be a martyr. I can stop.
Right into your game. There's a proper procedure here.
I can stop the procedure.
I'm going to call the floor over, and the floor is going to tell me that I go first. So. I can let you angle shoot me.
We can totally be alphabetical here if you want. I'll go first. My first and last name come before your first and last name. So if you want me to go first, I will. It's up to you.
No, I'm going to say, a loose, fearless, aggressive player, I think, usually only checks when he hits a monster. That's my theory.
Okay.
And my theory about that is they're so used to betting junk but they don't know how to bet when they actually hit something. So in this situation, my spidey senses are tingling a bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, of course, this is a new player, so it's really dangerous to read too much into anything because, you know, a new player just, you know, they could be doing anything and you're thinking something, but they don't really know what they're doing. But we have some backup here. We got a heart for the flush, right?
Mm-hmm.
Queen or 10 for a boat if he doesn't have pocket queens. Jack for a split if he doesn't have a king. So I'm kind of inclined to poke the beehive, as I call it. It will stick and just poke a little bit, see if I get stung. I'll put maybe a bet $3 to $4 out, see what's there.
Okay. Well, you know, here's the thing. It almost sounds like you're afraid of something here when we have a massive hand. I mean, I can't be afraid of the monsters under the bed, you know, even if he does have a monster they checked. And even if he has, like, the straight already, we still have outs to beat him. And I just don't put him on, you know, Jack 10 here. But even if he did have Jack 10, we have flush draw, straight draw, and top pair. So I don't want to poke the beehive. I want to knock it off the damn limb, step on it, and take all the honey. You know what I'm saying? So I don't like to check on the flop. We have a huge hand here, and if the player is truly loose, we'll probably get a call, and we should want a call because we got a huge hand. I definitely would have bet. I agree with you with betting. But since we didn't, I'll definitely bet the turn. When that turn comes, it makes our hand even more powerful. Now we've got queens up. So,
right.
Since we didn't bet and have to play the way he did, he's asking how much we should bet or whatever, I would bet like 8 to 10 on this turn. And then if I get raised, I'll make my decision based on how much he raises me and how I feel. But I definitely don't like the check. I would have bet that. So, anyway, there you go.
All right, but we have a huge hand, you said, right?
Yeah, I have a huge hand.
So if you get raised, you're gonna, what kind of decision are you going to make? You got a huge hand, you're saying.
Well, I'll make a decision on what I'm going to do with it.
Oh, okay.
Like, right. So based on the amount, if I'm going to re-raise or just call, is what I mean.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, I never said fold in there.
All right, just asking.
I'm sliced. The huge hand remark was on the flop, not the turn.
Oh, okay, so but, the turn, our hand's not huge.
It's huger on the turn.
Huger. So here's what our fans say at dannyupmagazine.com/forum. Rant is back. He loves this hand analysis stuff, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
he's good at it.
He is. So he gave us a very detailed response here. I started off by saying he forgives the call of 3B due to extenuating circumstances. He starts with humor. Kills you with kindness, and then boom. All right. He too is not a fan of checking on the flop, Chris. He says, I understand the villain is aggressive and that we expect him to bet, but one, we have top pair, so we want to get some value. Two, we are ahead of even the very strong hands like ace-ace or king-king with two cards to come. Three, villain is going to call or raise our bet with a lot of his range. He may check behind some of his draws if we check. Because of number two and villain's aggression, we aren't scared of getting raised. I'm perfectly happy calling a flop raise. And five, a check raise is very strong, and the villain may fold some hands that he'd otherwise semi-bluff or continue with past the turn. Then he says, the turn is a very interesting card. I prefer to check. It's going to be hard to get two streets of value from worse hands. Checking will probably increase the villain's bluffing frequency. Checking will probably allow us to value bet more thinly on the river and get called by weaker hands. Checking keeps the pot small and saves us money when the villain is slow playing the flop or has Jack X. Free cards aren't very dangerous. The board is already very scary, so the river isn't going to hurt our ability to extract value very much. We have quite a few outs to beat portions of villain's range that are ahead of us. I would only bet here if villain is a maniacal bluffer. That's the only time when a big pot is in our favor. If the villain is reasonable, then we'll lose too often when the pot gets big because he'll only bloat it with Jack X or maybe a set.
Man. Let me say that I agree with...
Maniacal bluffer, Chris.
Well, the thing is, though, is he prefers a check in the turn, but I think he's doing it based on he would have bet the flop. I think if he didn't bet the flop, I think he's going to want to get money in on the turn.
That's true.
Probably. I don't know, though. I mean, I can't speak for him. I'm just, you know, yeah, he would prefer a check if he'd gotten some money in.
It wouldn't be accurate to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't do it. So I don't know. But 3 points of view. Let's see the result.
Hello again. Well, we made the mistake of not betting our hand on the flop, and now we've got a decision to make. Do we give up the hand and check? Or do we bet our made top two and hope to flush out on the river? There are a host of hands our opponent could have that give him a jack. Ace-jack, king-jack, jack-ten, perhaps pocket-jacks. But it's just as likely he could have something like ace-king or an underpair. Since he probably would have bet a hand like ace-queen or king-queen on the flop, we may be able to push those to the back of our minds, possibly even queen-jack. We decide now is the perfect time to throw out a little value blocker bet. If he comes over the top big, we can lay this down pretty easily. We settle on $8. Our opponent announces raise and slides in $16. We don't like this, but with $36.75 in the pot and us only having to call 8 more with the potential 15 outs, pot odds insist we make this call. The only hands we're really hoping he doesn't have now is ace-king of hearts, ace-jack of hearts, or king-jack of hearts. The pot is $44.75, and the turn is the ace of hearts. Other than a fill-up on the river, there isn't much more we can ask for. Really, the only hand we're worried about now is the king-jack of hearts. But that's only one hand that beats us, and several that we dominate. If you ask me, I think this is a clear-cut value-betting situation. With $44.75 in the pot, we count out just under half-pot, $20, leaving us only $18.50 behind. Against most of the other players in this game, I would probably push it all in. But with this new player, I want to lure him in. He frowns and looks back down at his cards, muttering to himself and sighing. He counts out the $20, throws it into the pot, and immediately turns over his queen-nine of clubs. We study his hand just for a mere second before turning over our flush, and then rake in the $84.75 pot. We're right back on track. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley, and I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, I'm going to say, O'Malley obviously knows this player better than we do, and he obviously admits that he doesn't know him very well, but he was there, and you can see stuff. I mean, it's always hard about these things, right?
Right.
It's because so much of poker, you're picking up on your history from the entire night, not just what's written on a hand. So he knows this player better than we do, and obviously he got the call. But I think in most cases, I'm going to shove with $38 here to give the appearance of a bluff and take the shot right. That people are going to think that I'm bluffing and calling rather than, you know, a smallish bet where it would seem fishy and they might fold.
After I thought about it some more, because remember, we put this down, we try to put it down when it happens rather than all at once when we know it. We don't ever want to try to know the outcome when we do these things. So it was interesting. See, I don't know if I would have bet the turn now, thinking back about it, because any jack really would have beaten us on that turn, and if we had bet and then they shoved, would we have called a shove with only one card to come, regardless of our outs and two pair, when any jack beats us? So I'm not really sure about the bet on the turn now, and maybe I agree with the check. But the thing is, though, is that if we had checked the flop and then checked the turn, how much money are we getting in this hand on the river? You know, I mean, now we've made our flush, but, you know, it's so obvious now when you bet the end there that you've got a huge hand. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. When I was going through my mind of how to play this hand, any jack beats us. So if we did bet the turn and then he shoved on us, then what do you do? That's the thing, the question I have. So I don't know. I do like the river bet because as a shove could scare somebody. So I think that you'd want somebody with a jack or a smaller flush to call. So I'm just confused now by the turn, what I should do on the turn. You know what I mean? Because any jack, only because I'm afraid that I'm opening up the betting and then he could shove on me and then what do I do?
But I
hated not getting any money into the pot with this big of a hand on that flop. Wow. And that in turn confused me on the turn. So I don't know. I guess I still bet the turn to see if there's a jack, but if he shoves, then what do I do? So I don't know. Very confusing hand.
Well, yeah, but very good O'Malley's move.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. And I look forward to a fresh new one next week. Okay, so what's going on this week in the Ante Up News Desk?
David Chino Ream won the first Epic Poker League Championship in $1
million. Million dollars.
Outlasting a final table that included Eric Seidel, Jason Mercier, Gavin Smith, Hassan Habib, and Huck Seed.
A couple of things about this. How amazing is it that Eric Seidel was in heads up for the title? I mean, this guy's having a mammoth year.
This is what the poker players say, he's made a deal with the devil. You know, anybody that's this hot, they just can't be that hot. There has to be something else going on. But
the other thing, though, you know, and they were saying, look how amazing this final table was. But again, they're all poker pros who got invited to this very pristine, you know, prestigious thing. I mean, and but you know, the one last thing about Seidel is, you know, he's making all these great final tables and everything, but he's doing it at all these invitation events that only he can afford. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And a lot of these things. I mean, this thing obviously he didn't have to. I guess these are all, you know, you're allowed to play in them without paying for them or whatever. I don't know, but yeah, it is remarkable, but at the same time, he's also playing in events against people he's played against for years, and he's you know, doing it, you know, at a level that no one else could afford to do. I want to see these guys all make final tables in $1,000 buy events at the World Series, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny to me that you brought that up, because we hadn't talked about this, and last night where you were at Planet of the Apes, I was actually watching Secretariat.
Oh, yeah.
On DirecTV. Great movie, by the way.
Yeah, great movie.
Of course, any movie that Diane Lane is in is phenomenal. But, you know, I didn't really know much about the Secretariat legend, and of course, you know, watching a dramatized movie is not the best place to learn.
Right.
The stuff is made up and stuff, but I thought it was funny when they get down to the Belmont, you know, the big Triple Crown final race, and there are only five horses in it.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And of course, they mentioned, well, you know, these two horses are getting so much publicity, there's no way that our horses are going to win. So I'm like, you know what? That's a little cheap. We had to beat four horses. But then you start to think, well, he still had to beat four horses.
Yep.
And one of them was really good. So, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, but, you know.
I know, but it's not the same.
He still has to be second and first in these things to begin this notoriety. So it's, you know.
But it's still amazing what he's doing. I'm not taking anything away from it. It's just interesting that they're making the biggest deals about the events that he's, you know. There are only a few privileged people in the world who can play at his level and play with that kind of money. So, you know, all he's got to do is beat those few privileged people and to get his notoriety. But obviously, he's a fantastic player. He hasn't won many bracelets in
the
Hall of Fame. Yeah, of course. But pretty remarkable. And congratulations to Chino. That's pretty cool. Okay, some of the largest poker rooms in California, including some Indian casinos, have started an advertising blitz in Sacramento to encourage lawmakers. And I'm not sure what to do with these bills. To vote on them, I guess? I don't know.
To act on them.
Okay. Relating to internet poker within the month, the Los Angeles Times reports. Meanwhile, a rival group that includes Indian Casino Pala has started a letter writing campaign to defeat the bills.
Yeah, our friends out in California know this whole process pretty well, that there are split in the ranks out there among casinos over the best way to start internet poker out in California, and that's exactly what's going on here. You got one group that's saying, hey, We got a month left to get these bills through. Let's get moving on them. And then you got the other group saying, "Whoa, hey, let's not rush into anything here.
Yeah,
well, let's let the month expire," which coincidentally means that the bills expire.
Exactly.
And then we can think of anything else. But you know, again, a classic example of one of the reasons that poker is being held back in our country is that even the people that want poker can't agree on what kind of poker they want.
Yeah.
All right, and then finally, the popular poker couple Chip and Karina Jett, who tragically lost their boy Apollo in a drowning accident last year, are the proud parents of Angelina Jett, who was born this week.
Very happy for them.
Yay!
Very happy. It was funny because we had gone to the World Series, and we were there for the ladies' event, and we saw her out there, and I was like, what's going on with your belly there? She's like, I'm pregnant, and I'm like, oh, my God. So I was very happy for them, and it was funny. They did a bunch of stuff on Twitter, too. They showed the picture of the baby and her in the delivery room with her other daughter. And I'm just really happy for them. Glad it's working out for them again. So,
that's great.
Very good news.
this is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, we've been waiting a while to do this show, Chris.
Yes, we have.
It's been a couple months since we got an email from, actually, maybe even a whole year.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Just been so busy, right?
Yep.
Then we get this email from Button Girl in Wales, across the pond. And she wrote in saying, hey, I was re-listening to your old podcast, and on show 10, gosh, can you remember show 10?
Man, show 10.
We're on show, like, what, 310, 320 now or something?
Probably.
It says, on show 10, you guys picked your top 10 favorite pros. Great discussion of various pro styles and characters. That was ages ago. Yeah, 6 years ago.
6 years.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear how your list have changed over the past 5 years or so. She says, I just got my boyfriend to start listening right from the St. Pete Times days, and I've started from show one again. Just as much fun the second time around.
Very cool.
And this is what I think was interesting. I told you to go back and get the show. We actually updated our list without listening to that.
Right.
To know what we had, so it wasn't influenced by it. But when I told you to go back and look at it, you said that show was like, what, 22 minutes long? The whole
yeah, the whole show was 22 minutes. To give you an idea, our show is already an hour long. We haven't even got to the list yet.
We're just blowhards now.
Oh, my God.
And what's funny about that, too, is our first show was like 5 minutes, right? So
yeah.
That 22-minute show was probably a marathon.
I know. We couldn't believe we were sitting there that long. Our bosses were looking for us. They thought we were DOA.
Oh, man. All right. So how do we want to do this?
Well, I think that you need to do your list, and right. I'll have comments about what you did, and then I'll do mine. And then, because right. If we alternate, then it might get confusing. So.
Yeah, it's going to get confusing. All right. So I'll start here. All right, I'm going to, I'm already poking the beehive.
Yeah, you've been doing that all show, yeah.
I might as well just be consistent, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to poke the beehive a little bit here, and some of the listeners might get a little cranky, but I'm straying a little bit from Button Girl's direct question. Yeah, but I'm going to say I maintain that my approach to this list now is very different than it was 6 years ago. You know, I know a lot more about poker now than I did then. And I'm presuming that my list back then was predicated on who I saw on the World Poker Tour broadcast and not much else.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the only experience with poker I had back then.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was always the big... Even Hands of the Week came off the WPT, remember?
Yep.
It's kind of funny. So 6 years later, more than 3 years after starting a poker business, I have a much deeper appreciation for players who grow the poker business than I did back then. And I believe really strongly that players who help grow the business are the ones who provide more opportunities for all of us to enjoy the game. So while I may not like some of these folks on my list on a personal level, I have to give them all mad props for what they do for the game of poker and making it easier for us to play.
Okay. Well, we'll start with the first one.
You don't like it, right?
Well, let's keep moving. Moving on.
All right, first on my list, actually, these are in no particular order.
Okay. So yeah, mine aren't in order either. They're just the five that came to my mind first.
I'm going to start out with Mike Sexton, poker spokesman. The only thing I can remember from my first list is that I had respect for quiet players who did their business without showboating. And that obviously hasn't changed, in my opinion, though I've relaxed on a little bit. A little bit of appreciation for characters out there now.
Right.
But certainly Mike embodies the quiet doing their business out showboating. He's been around for a lot of years, plays a quiet but skilled game. He's active with charity, poker's politics. And I ask you this, if you had to pick one person, just one person, to go out to tell the world about the virtues of poker, who else would you pick besides Mike Sexton, Chris?
Scott Long. Because he would tell everyone, go listen to Mike Sexton.
No, I think he's just a great ambassador.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a likable guy for even people that aren't poker players, as I'm talking about. I mean, think about it. There's a lot of poker players that you could put in front of Congress or a civic group, and they'd be like, yep, those guys are exactly what I think they would look like. But
and
it's not, I don't think.
The other thing we have to remind people is that for most of these people, we don't really know them.
No, of course.
So we only have to go by what we are exposed to and what we read about.
Exactly.
I mean, we've heard everyone's heard rumors about how some of these players, people treat other people or whatever, and that's fine. You want to go with what you've heard from people or whatever, but basically from what we've seen and what we've read about, this is how we feel about these people. So I don't want to get lambasted for liking somebody, then they said, you know what he did to me when I, you know, so hey, whatever he did to you is your business, not mine.
All right, second, Doyle Brunson, the master of changing with times. I'm going to admit, probably too easy of a choice here, right?
Yeah.
Whose list isn't Doyle on?
Right.
But beyond all the things that most people like about him, you know, obviously he's very skillful, writes great books, he's got a fun personality. What I like most about him is that he shows he can change with the times, not just his play, but his overall approach to the game. He is one of the funniest tweeters out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I are still trying to figure out how to tweet anyhow. And this guy's twice our age.
Yeah.
That's really impressive to me. You know, here's the thing, too. I mean, we left a big newspaper company in part because they weren't changing with the times.
Yeah.
And here's a player who easily could just sit back and then relax and continue to play and proceed on what got him there. Oh, but he's not. He's changing.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for people or institutions that can recognize that what worked yesterday may not always work tomorrow.
And so it makes him world class. You know, I mean, really, he's world class. He's a world class athlete when he was younger, and he was a world class player when he was younger, and he still is. And he's just a world class overall human being, and that's what makes him strive to adapt to everybody and not just his own ways.
Yeah, and he borrowed $20 from me and never gave it back. All right, now next, Greg Raymer, who I'm calling the approachable diplomat. Probably won't fit on a business card.
It's pretty long.
But no, seriously, when poker room managers call me and ask me what pro I think they should bring to the room for an event, my answer always starts with and usually ends with Greg Raymer. He's a class act, incredibly smart, good at a variety of games, loves Badoogie.
Yes.
Very active in poker politics. But for me, his best asset among all those really strong ones is just how approachable he is. I've never known him to have an agent or handlers, you know, aside from the normal Poker Stars handlers. Never seen him not stop to talk to a fan. He's always been gracious with us when we needed something from him,
whether
being on the show or whatever. And, you know, to me, you ask about, you know, what kind of World Series champion you want, and I can go on and on about how much I respect Greg Raymer, how he's conducted himself after he's won. And, you know, there's room in this game for characters and things like that, but if we had to clone players, I would clone Greg.
Yeah, and he's another ambassador. I mean, all the stuff that he's done with the PPA, and, you know, I just think that he's looking out for poker players on top of just being a class act himself, and he's a great guy.
All right, next, Daniel Negreanu, who I'm calling the builder of the brand. And I got to admit, I'm cheating a little bit here. So, you know, Doyle, you don't have to give me that $20. you know, to be honest, Phil Helmuth really should have this spot on my list when I'm talking about the builder of the brand. But I just can't bring myself to consider him one of my favorite poker players, Chris.
Okay.
But he certainly was the original builder of the brand. And what I'm talking about is... you know, Phil was the first one to realize that his name alone has value, and what he needed to do beyond just winning poker tournaments to increase the value of his name. And so more palatable to me is the heir apparent to that title, Daniel Negreanu. He's learned his lessons well, put his own twist on it too, so he's not just copying. No doubt he's a polarizing figure just like Phil is. But I think his antics, such as they are, serve a purpose beyond getting airtime.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah, no, I understand. And it is interesting that the two guys that you've picked out are the ones that you said are they both are probably the most polarizing figures there are. Love him or hate him is how they, you know, usually are categorized. Either you love Helmuth or you hate him, or you love Negreanu or you hate him. And I agree. And it's usually the ones that are building the brand are the ones that are like that, the ones that you love to hate.
Yeah, and I guess my last point about that was, you know, Phil Helmuth is an incredibly smart guy, so I'm not taking anything away from him. But I do get the impression that, you know, when he blows up on TV or he is dragged into World Series on, you know, as a Roman chariot, that he's really doing it just for people to pay attention to him.
Well, yeah.
Because I think Daniel, with a lot of his comments and things like that, he's trying to serve a purpose with it. He's trying to get information. He's trying to get people, poker players, to think about issues or things like that. He might certainly rub them the wrong way, but I think he's trying to get to somewhere rather than just, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, but that's just my impression.
You ever wonder if sometimes, like, Helmuth finds somebody and says, hey, man, I'll make us both famous this week. Let me pick on you a little bit on TV. And,
well, he could. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying he does, obviously. But yeah, I mean, yeah. What's to stop him? I mean, yeah. That's exactly what he did.
It's like Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler, you know?
Yeah.
When they all thought that was legitimate and that they were really mad at each other when they were doing it themselves to try to boost the game and of wrestling. But it's interesting. Very interesting.
All right, my final one on my list is Lee Childs, who I'm calling the Teacher of the Year, also very charity-minded. And I know this is a serious Homer alert here.
Call you Homer Simpson.
but I'm going to assure our listeners it isn't. I really, honestly, and every fiber of my body, believe that there's no resource I've used, books, magazines, classes, other pros, that I've learned more about the game from than Lee. You know, when I read his columns, I'm stunned at how clearly he can communicate a complex concept, and I can read it, and I don't have to do all this math and follow this and that, and just light bulbs go off every time. It's just amazing to me.
Right.
You know, I've been a writer my entire life, and I don't think I can distill complex concepts the way he does. And of course, you know, when he comes on our show, it's always great. It does the same thing. And certainly in person, it's fun just to hang out with him and talk about this kind of stuff with us well too. He's going to be on a cruise this month, and he's going to be on the one in December as well too. And when I was writing the little bio, one of the lines I put in there is that there are thousands of poker pros out there, but really only a few of them can really teach the game.
Yeah.
Lee's one of them. You know, just a great guy too. He does all these charity events. He's certainly given Annie up far more than we've given him, and you know, we could never repay all that. Just one of those great guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just helps that he's also really good at poker and really good at teaching it. So I'm sure I'll find a negative somewhere. You know, and get over this man crush at some point. But
he doesn't have enough hair.
Yeah, see, I kind of like that though. Bald is beautiful, man.
Okay, I don't know. I was grasping at straws there. I try to help you out. But, yeah, I kind of like a shiny dome, too, so what are you going to do? All right, well, it's time for my list, and I am going to answer the direct question.
Boring!
Because I'm all about making the fans happy.
No, you're not.
If someone says, hey, Scott, how much money do you have on you? I don't want to hear a story about how the parking attendant thinks you're a racist. I want to know how much money you have in your pocket. Button Girl asks who our favorite players are. And I even gave an example of the fact that we talked about the players and their styles and everything, and she was looking for us to say who our favorite players were, not our favorite ambassadors. So I'm going to actually answer the list.
And that's why you're the crowd favorite.
Yeah, right. I'm the straight-laced guy, and you're the drunk. So anyway, it says, and since I knew more about poker 6 years ago than I do now, because I think that I shouldn't pontificate on anything else but why I like their personalities and playing styles. I also feel like I'm obligated to list professional players that everyone knows because of the nature of this question and the history behind the topic. But if I didn't have to list them, then number one would be my wife, and then followed closely by my dad, my mom, Frank Toscano, and Faso. Those are the five poker players.
Straight.
You're like on 10 or 11, actually.
10 or 11?
Yeah. You're too tough to beat, buddy. And that's no slap on the other guys.
And I appreciate you're trying to get some brownie points here with the wifey and your friends, because the question clearly was, you picked out your 10 favorite pros, so there's nothing to say your 10 favorite players. So
I know, but I'm obligated to.
You're trying me to go off script, and you're right there in the doom buggy as well.
I know. Oh, man. Okay, well, I, too, did not listen to the last show. I waited, did my top five, and as evidence of that, we didn't listen to it after, when we did all of our top lists here. I went back and listened to get the list of who we liked. There was actually a top five that you and I had to agree upon. back then to make it a top 10 list. So that clearly shows that we didn't listen to the show. So anyway, here are my five. Tom Dwan. You know, he may be a little peculiar sometimes, and he may take a long time to act on his hand when he's playing live. But I got to tell you, when I watch this guy play and the moves he makes, you know, he's the one who made me like watching poker again. You know, there was a long stretch there where I just couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't watch anymore. But when he started coming on and started doing the things that he did, and at such a young age playing for so much money, that's what made poker so exciting. You know, it wasn't the backstories on ESPN. It wasn't the you know, get drunk girls on WPT or whatever their names are. You know, it was the fact that these guys are taking risks with money that would pay off my house and retire me, and it was just so phenomenal. And this kid just came out of nowhere and is just beating up on the greatest players in the world and doing it in front of millions of people. And it's just remarkable what he can do. So I really appreciate having him on TV to watch when he is on. Okay, Phil Ivey, and who would have thought that liking Ivey nowadays would include ethics and morality in the reasoning right. for liking him, not just the fact that he's the most amazing player in the world that there is. I'm pretty sure that I probably listed him back on show 10 when I was coming up this list, so it was because of his amazing play, and I still feel that way. But anybody who makes a stand against the company that was paying him, and you know what I mean? And to boycott the World Series like that, and you know, whether there's a lot of people coming out and trying to discredit what he did or why he did it or whatever, I don't care. What he did was, to me, was aces in my book, and just another reason to put him on my top five list. Doyle Brunson, like you said, you know, do I really have to explain why? You've already went through it. I mean, he's on my dollar bill, so enough said. Doyle Brunson,
he's actually
is
on
my
your
list.
Real dollar bill, is right,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Two pictures of them.
I've made them up and printed them out of my own little printer here, and I pass them out. But really, Doyle Brunson, clearly, for all the reasons that you said, you know, and the perfect example of when you said that he was just so ingratiating to people was, you know, where I was at Foxwoods when I interviewed him that time, and I sat down next to him, and clearly a guy who didn't have both his oars in the water came up to him and said, "Hey, you're Doyle Brunson, right?" And Doyle's like, "Yeah, yeah." He's like, honey, come over here. This is Doyle Brunson. He's been playing poker for 75 years. When Doyle was only 74 years old, sitting in the chair or whatever. So, and he was just so gracious to the guy, and the guy wouldn't let it go, and he kept talking, and he just never blew a gasket or anything. He just sat there and took it, and was very, very kind, and that's why Doyle's on my list, because the person he is. Okay, this one, Sammy Farha.
Interesting.
There aren't enough O's in smooth to describe this guy.
Only two.
There's only two. There should be more. and I'm sure it's not easy being the guy who is on the bad end of the bluff of the century. But if he doesn't lose, we may not even have a magazine or a poker cast today. And I'm glad that they made that made-for-TV heads-up rematches thing. Otherwise, I might never get to see him on TV again because I don't know if he doesn't get invited to the high stakes or those shows. You know, are now far and few between because, you know, of what's going on with the online everything and the sponsorships and everything. So I don't know when next time I'm going to be able to see this guy on TV. But when he was on TV, when I see him play, whether it's at the World Series when I'm out there or whatever, it's just so enjoyable to watch this guy. He is such a character, and the way he dresses, the way he talks, the way he acts, he's just hilarious to watch and an incredible reader of players and you know, again, back to the reason why I'm putting him on my list is because of just the player he is and his style. Just really, really cool. Sammy Farha. Plus the Omaha, too. He wrote that Omaha book, you know, which is, he's one of the best players in the world in Omaha. And my final one, Gavin Smith. You know, I got to know him fairly well with all of our interaction with him down at Sarasota. I interviewed him for the magazine a few times and for the show a couple of times. And, you know, knowing that he lives basically with death at his doorstep constantly and still managed to be one of the nicest, funniest guys that I've ever met or have ever beaten in a sit-and-go Brag alert. I know. But really, I mean, you know, that he's got that tumor and he's got medication, but really, at any moment, anything could happen and he could be gone. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he's so gregarious and approachable and everything. But he's hilarious, real nice guy, and just an incredible player, an absolute incredible player. And I'm glad he got the monkey off his back with the bracelet win last year, too. But just incredible. And he's really, if I'm flicking through the channels and I see him on TV, I'm watching. And that's one of the reasons why, because he's just so much fun to watch and to be around and fun to play with when I had that one chance to play with him. So that's my top five. I made it short. That's why I went last, because I know the show's getting long. So, but our original top five that we agreed on.
Yes, I'm waiting to hear this.
Doyle Brunson. And it's funny, because 10,000 years ago, you said the exact same thing about him as you did this time. It's almost verbatim.
I know, I didn't mention him tweeting.
I know, you didn't mention him tweeting. But the whole, you know, how could he... whose list is he not on? You said the exact same thing 5-6 years ago.
Great.
That's pretty funny. Phil Ivey, we agreed on.
All right, yeah.
Johnny Chan. Howard Lederer and Daniel Negreanu. So you had two on your list from that list of top five, and I had two on my list from that top five. So that's interesting. But again, that wasn't our own individual list, so...
Well, if I remember correctly, I think we probably sat down and we came up with our own list and we found that we had five together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that was, I think that's pretty much how we did it.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So, you know.
But what I really find interesting is that our own top fives, none of them repeated on any of our other our new top fives. None of them. Yours were Dewey Tomko.
I didn't remember that one.
Dan Harrington.
Yeah, not surprised by that.
Annie Duke.
Wow, that's a shocker.
Men, the Master Win.
Wow, that's a real shocker.
And TJ Cloutier.
Yeah, not a shocker, but obviously different now.
And clearly that it's you know, what you were exposed to back then.
Yeah.
And then clinging to the whole, most of them. You know, the funny thing is you said quiet, but I don't think Annie Duke and Men, the Master were quiet.
Yeah,
but,
not very quiet.
But but really, yeah, you could see that it's more of a, hey, I was just what I'm exposed to or what I've seen on TV at the time. And the same with me. Mine were Gus Hansen, Chris Ferguson, Phil Hellmuth.
Crossover there.
Yeah. Jennifer Harmon.
Well, yeah, I knew that one.
And Scotty Wynn. So it's interesting that my top five are nowhere to be found on my new top five, and same with you. That's pretty cool how much we've changed. And it's just, you know, I mean, some of them like Gavin Smith and Dwan, we didn't really know about back then. Obviously, Dwan obviously wasn't even playing back then. He was still in high school.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ivy and Brunson for me was because they're, you know, they were on our original, you have to have them on top five. So pretty interesting stuff there. I really thought hard about this top five list.
Rainbow wasn't around either, right?
Who?
I mean, when did Rainbow win his World Series?
Oh, well, 04.
All right. Yeah, I guess it was right after.
Yeah, it was like right after he won. So, yeah.
Never mind.
But it's pretty cool to see how our list changed over the years and how it stayed the same too.
Yeah.
You know. It's a great topic. Thanks, Button Girl. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great making us go back and revisit stuff like that.
We should do that every week. Keep the streak going.
Maybe not.
Next week, top five rookie mistakes.
One, listening to Ante Up.
Two, voting for Ante Up. Three, defending Ante Up. Four, going on the forums and defending Ante Up. Should we get to five before we move on? Five, subscribing to Ante
Up. End of the week.
All right, let's go to end of the week.
Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Ante Up.
Lily had two queens. She was hoping for a third to match her pair.
All the way from Iceland, Chris.
Wow.
I know we've had Hands of the Week from Denmark. You know, we had, what was his name? Peter, our cab driver friend in Denmark?
Yes, yes.
And we've had him from all the world. I don't remember us ever having a Hand of the Week from Iceland.
Man, Iceland. Add that one to the list.
And you know, when I wrote our listener back, thanking him for the hand, telling us we had a Hand of the Week, he actually gave me a pronunciation guide, Chris.
Really?
And I was like, come on, really? I need a pronunciation guide? What makes you think that I'm going to mangle your name?
You know he's a true fan when he knows that you need a pronunciation guide to pronounce his name.
All right, so he's got a little AE squished together. I don't know what it's actually called there. It's, you know, they got, I'm sure they got a name, for it,
yeah.
Whatever. Iceland have its own language?
I don't know.
Icish?
I don't know. Well, you know, the thing is if you don't know that answer, like I don't know that answer, then people are going to pipe up and say, you guys should do your research.
Yeah.
You should know if Iceland has its own language. I'm sure there's Icelandic language. I'm pretty sure there is an Icelandic language, but I don't know.
All right. Well, anyhow, using his pronunciation, guys, it would be Samunder.
Wow.
Samunder?
Samunder.
But then he said I could simply say Sammy, Sammy or Simon. And then he said he used to live in the States, and he ended up with 5 nicknames from people butchering his name. So really, as long as we don't call him late for dinner, I think he's fine.
Okay.
All right. He wants to thank us for our fantastic podcast.
Aww.
Long-time listener, first-time writer. This comes from a $1, $3 no-limit hold'em cash game in an underground poker room in Iceland. Chris, how cold is the underground poker room in Iceland?
Yeah, and is it really ground? Should it be under ice, maybe? It's an under ice poker room. I mean, it's Iceland. There's no, you know, there's no ground. It's ice.
It's not true. Iceland's a very beautiful country.
I know.
Lots of green area. I want to get there sometime. It's expensive, though.
Yeah. You know, it's probably warmer underground because you're getting closer to the center of the earth.
Well, yeah, they have those hot springs there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I saw Bear Grylls take a sheep eye once and boil it in one of those springs and eat it. It was awesome.
Wow. All right. It says this room is known for crazy action.
It's insane.
Sunday. and very loose play. We're under the gun straddles of $10 to $20 and $15 to $30 pre-flop races are not uncommon, Chris.
Love those games. I do.
Love Reno Limit.
I do love those games, man.
I would only love them if I had the bankroll to play it over. This is not your typical 1-3 no limit game at the Florida Horse Track. All right, he says, many pots are multi-way despite the big raises, and guys have volunteered money in the pot. They almost always limp call.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's like a 2-4 limit game on steroids. All right, he says, this night was no exception, and I was up from 300 to 1,200 playing very tight aggressive.
Very nice.
Says, two very loose action junkies just sat down with $1,000 each, and the two seats to my immediate left and right, and this is their first hand.
Okay.
All right. The guy on his right limps under the gun, and our hero, who I'm going to call Simon.
Okay.
Told me I could. Looks down at Jack of Hearts, Jack of Spades.
Very nice.
Going this crazy setup here. What do you do with the hardest hand to play in poker?
Well, he said that preflop raises were generally 15 to 30, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'd make
not uncommon, he says.
Yeah, I guess I'd make it 20. You know, what the hell? I mean, if that's what, how the game is playing, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to make it to
I'm not going to make it 6 or 9. Yeah, so, yeah. So I'll make it 20, I guess. I mean, that's what I would probably do with them.
All right. Boy, you know what? I hate... In this kind of game... And I'm going to get flayed for this, starting with you, but I'm sure it'll spread to the forum. I don't want to build a big pot with jacks.
No.
In this game, I think jacks are not a good hand.
To be honest with you, I don't really don't want to build a big pot with any big pair, to be
honest. With anything, right? So I might just do the whole limp call since everybody else is doing that, right? And let somebody else set the price for me.
Hmm.
Rather than raising and then maybe getting re-raised. And then, you know, set mine a little bit, not necessarily just set mine, you know. We'll have a few more plays in my
quiver. The only thing
but,
is,
I you know,
I agree with that.
The gun plus one
sometimes.
Too.
I agree with that sometimes. The only thing here is that we don't know how the two guys who sat down play, right?
Right.
I mean, he says that they're loose.
Very loose action junkies.
But, I mean...
must be after all this, right?
Yeah. How would he know that when they sat down?
Right, right.
I mean, especially he doesn't know their names or anything. So if that is the case, where we don't know how these guys play first, then I want to revert to ABC Poker for a while just to see how they play. If I start making moves or whatever.
That's just two guys at the table, though, Chris.
No, I understand, but they both sat down with a grand, and I have 1,200 in front of me, you know, and I don't know if it's a full table. It could be six-handed, so a third of my field is...
Could be.
You know, I don't know.
Right.
Because that detail is not given to us. So, I don't know, but I still think that I need to thin the field with jacks. I really don't want to limp with them and set mine. If somebody raises in the back, are you just going to call again, or are you going to re-raise?
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's not that we're not thinning the field. We assume somebody else is going to raise here because that's what's going to happen. I just don't want to be the one that puts the first raise in and then have it get raised again with six people calling, which it sounds like is going to happen.
Hmm. All right, let's see.
I keep my risk limited right now, and if I get a good flop, you know, if I... You know, hit my miracle two out for my set, or we get some all unders on a raggedy board, then I'm much more Rambo.
Hmm. Okay. Well,
shocking that you don't agree with.
Yeah,
that.
I don't know, and maybe like maybe I don't think outside the box enough. But when I'm playing cash games, I tend to look for ways to just expose people for money at times, and that's how I get my profit rather than always playing optimally every single second. I don't know, maybe that's not the right thing to say, but I'm just saying at this point I like to play just not knowing the guys are just sat down. I don't want to get too... I don't want to outthink myself or trick myself out of it. I really think I need to raise here, and it, like you said, if somebody raises and they all call, if I knew that was going to happen, I might limp, because then I could really put in a big pop and really narrow it down, or even take the hand down at that point without seeing a flop. But I just feel like I need to thin the field. Because it's not like, you know, I don't think he said, I can't remember now, but I don't think he said that if someone raises, they all call.
That's true.
Right, so I would like to raise here and see what happens.
All right, well, our hero is in Team Cosenza for this one. Okay. This is the $30.
Okay.
And he's hoping to get it down to two or three way to the flop. So I guess that's proof that he believes that what you just said, that not everybody calls the big raises.
Right.
Says the guy to his left calls. A loose, aggressive regular knows our hero is a tight player, calls on the button, and the under the gum limper calls.
Hmm.
And I guess I did forget that we, well, he says we were playing very tight. I didn't know we had a profile as being a tight player. That changes things a little bit, I guess, for me. Because then when I come in raising, then people have to respect me for having a hand.
How would right.
Say? Interesting. All right, so we have, what, one, two, three callers?
Yeah, it looks like it's...
Yep,
one,
four-handed.
Two, yeah. Three, yeah.
Pot's 120, and then the flop is ace of spades, jack of clubs, ten of diamonds, and under the gun checks.
Well, that's a pretty good flop for us. I mean, really only two hands beat us, what, pocket aces and king, queen.
Mm-hmm.
Which... King Queen is possibility.
It is.
But again, I'm not just gonna not bet here. I got middle set and I showed aggression. So I would bet about 2/3 of the pot, maybe a little more. So that would be what, $80, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd bet about 80, I guess.
Wow. You will be welcome to Simon's game in Iceland anytime. Because he bet $80.
And it's never good when the guy analyzing the hand does exactly what the guy who sent in the hand, because clearly that means that something's not right. So
at some point, we always get off the rails. So
yeah,
don't worry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so...
I wonder here if... as crazy as this game sounds. Again, and you're right, I'm connecting dots that might not be there to connect. But, you know, I might go ahead and bet pot here.
Oh, the whole, okay. I was going to say check. If you said check,
oh,
I was like, wait a minute.
No. Because
5 seconds ago, in the we were talking earlier about O'Malley's move. You're like, anybody who raises and then checks is fishy. And so I was thinking that you were doing that here. But no, okay.
Yeah,
bet pot.
No, I'm not going to do a lot of checking in a game that's crazy anyhow. There's no reason to.
I mean,
you're not. I mean, when you're checking and they get crafty, it's you're hoping to extract more money later on. This game, I mean, you can bet and you know you're going to get calls or raises, so there's no reason not to bet your good hand. There's no reason to not bet every hand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it's going to get bet by someone. So, yeah, I'm certainly never checking. It's not even in my top 47 options here.
So you're betting pot. Why? Because you think someone hit it, or because you think that the type of hands that might be out there.
I don't think a pot bet's going to scare everyone out, so I might as well extract as much value as I can. I think I have the best hand here. I'm not really worried about pocket aces. The king queen obviously will be in the back of my head, and I'll see how things go. But at this point, I'm just trying to get value on every street because this is a game that's going to I'm going to get paid every street.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I wonder though if I bet 120, if I get two guys to fold and only one caller, but if I bet 80, I might get two callers and get 160.
Very good way of looking at it. Yep.
So sure. I don't know. I'll stick with 80. You can go with 120.
All right. Well, our hero decided to bet 80, so that's obviously the right thing.
That's not obviously the right thing. Otherwise, he wouldn't be sending his hand in, maybe.
But he is probably a bit too small. So see, he agrees with both of us at the same time, Chris.
Wow, that's hard to do.
But he figured that if the other guys had any piece, they would call, and I don't want to overinflate the pot. The guy to his left instantly calls. The loose aggressive player folds, and under the gun, check calls instantly. I guess just called.
Yeah. Who? I guess the only guy who checked calls instantly. I guess that was, maybe that's the best way to say it. But yeah. All right, so we got two callers at 80, which is what I was saying, actually. Right, maybe right. If we bet 120, the under gun folds. I don't know. But all right, so we got an extra 160 in the pot now because of that.
Pot is 360. The turn is an ugly queen of hearts.
Ugh.
Which he says obviously gives anybody with king a straight.
Yeah.
The under gun player grabs $200 in chips and throws them in without much thought.
Yeah.
It's on us now.
Oh man. Sick. That's just sick. Well, we have 10 outs if they have the straight. So, 200 to win 560, and you still don't know what the other guy is going to do. It's tough because clearly you're not getting the right odds to call. And even implied odds, if the board pairs, I don't know how much you're going to get out of the guy who has a king. God.
Probably what I would think. If you go to straight, you're probably going to call some sort of bet here.
Yeah, I just don't know how much the guy has left behind that it's going to be worth it for us to do this.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know what his stack was.
I think what's difficult here is we got another player still in.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to be the whole monsters under the bed thing here, but what if they both had kings?
Yeah.
This guy bets, we call, and then the other guy raises, and then he gets in there, you know, then... I mean, at that point, if it's a raise and re-raise, it gets back to us. We know it's, you know, pretty ugly at that point. So I'm not saying we should fold because we're worried about that. But, you know, because another player could give us enough money, I would think, right, maybe, to give us odds?
If the guy has...
Potentially?
Yeah, if the guy has, like, another 1,000 behind or something, or 800 or something, it probably is right. You could probably get him to call a bet on the end that would make it right. I would think, as far as implied odds, but I don't really know the stack, so I don't know. And then again, it is scary because what if the guy behind? You have to think this way: the guy behind does have a king. You call the 200. The guy behind you has 1,200. He shoves 12. Then the other guy calls. Can you really call now with just 10 outs? All that money? There's no way. There's no more money to be won.
Right.
I don't think you can. So you have to take everything into consideration. And I'm not really sure what to do here now. The odds of them both having tens and both calling with just a gut shot. Unless they already had the straight. I don't know. I think maybe I call. Maybe I call because the odds, like I said, the odds of both players having a king. And, I mean, maybe somebody flopped the nuts with king 10, or king queen, I mean. All right. Well, I don't know. That's a big bet to call. With just a gut shot, but maybe they have a gut shot in a pair.
Yeah,
it's tough.
King, they could have ace king. They could have a jack king.
Yeah,
king,
yeah.
jack king probably a little unlikely because we have two of the. Jacks,
we have two of the jacks. Yeah, it could
ace
be
king. Probably would king, have queen. Been re-raised pre-flop. I would think so. Probably doubtful, but
I guess. Oh man, I mean, it's weird if you know you're behind and you know you're not going to get any more money out of somebody. That then you'd fold, but it's hard to know what's going to happen here with the guy behind you too. I guess I would call. I don't know. I want to say fold here, but I'm afraid to fold because the guy could be representing too, and you know it's such a loose table or a loose room, as he said.
I'm sure this shows how unskillful I am at no limit cash games, but I think I want to call here and hope that it only cost me the $200
yeah.
to see the river.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm going to want to boat up or, you know, miraculously everybody checks. Everybody's trying to represent the king and didn't have it or something like that. And, you know, I guess I'm willing to wager $200 here that it's not going to get raised. I'm not going to be put to a test here on the turn.
Well, the other thing, too, is that I'm not privy to what the other guy is emanating. You know what I mean? I don't know what his tell is. I don't know if I'm looking at him and he looks like he's going to fold, like he grabbed his cards, or if he doesn't have any interest in the hand. I mean, I it's hard for me to just black and white say, yeah, the guy's going to fold or the guy's going to call. Whereas if I'm at the table, I might be able to get some sort of inkling that he's weak or that he's not going to call, that 200 bet scared him or something. And then I might be heads up with the guy who made the bet.
Okay, well, interesting you brought that up because our hero says that he's 100% sure that the bettor here has a king. And while he's tanking, he looks to the guy to his right, who seems uninterested, and I get a feeling he has given up on the hand, so I'm not worried about being raised.
Oh, that's good to know. Then I think I definitely call the king. Call the bet for the king. Because you know what? The other thing, too, is when I'm playing, and maybe this isn't the right way to think, but when I'm playing, if I started with 300 and I'm up to 1,200, and if I lose this hand or if I don't get what I want on the river, and I've only lost 280 on this hand, or whatever it is, 280, 300, I'm still up 600 on this night, and I can get that money back, or I can still quit a pretty damn big winner.
Yeah.
So that also comes into my thinking. Now, if I only had 300 in front of me, and I started this hand, and it cost me all my chips to do this, or I would be a loser, you know, I'm going to be a loser for the night when I could rally later with these loose players, I don't know how I think or react. But in this instance, I'm up 900. If I lose this hand, I'm still up 600 because I don't call on the river if it doesn't help me. So I play differently when I'm up a bunch, and that's usually when I succeed more, too, is when I'm up a bunch, I continue to be up a bunch. I don't usually lose it. So
Here's the thing. I don't think that's a bad way of thinking at all.
Okay.
And, I know some people will say, hey, that's your money now. It's not anybody else's money. But here's the thing. I mean, everything in our lives is built off of credit.
Yeah.
You know, you can't buy a house without credit. Credit lets you, you know, enjoy the fruits of something before you've actually paid for it. And I think I consider if I'm up 900 here, that's working capital.
Yeah, exactly.
And
working capital.
That helps me earn more money, and I have to put it at risk. So it's not that I'm going to be crazy or foolish with it, but at the same time, if I always think of the money in front of me as what I started with, I think it's much harder to actually make more money then.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like our business. When we first started, we didn't take paychecks because we couldn't afford it.
Right.
And that's why we didn't take as many risks with our business. But once we started making some money, we started doing other ventures like TV and cruises. So same thing here. I want to go on a cruise, and I can afford it. So I'm going to call this hand and hope the guy behind me folds. And now that I know he's not interested in the hand, I feel much more comfortable about calling 200 with the implied odds of hitting my boat on the end or quads.
Yep. All right, great. All right, so our hero says the only way for us to win, obviously, is to boat up or catch a king on the river for a split. It says the under-the-gun player has put 310 into the pot and has 690 left, which he's positive he'll get if he boats up.
Oh, okay. Well, even if you're confident you're going to get it, yeah. So that's a pretty decent chance to make your money back then, you know, and to give you the correct odds, I think. If he's positive he's going to get the 690, I didn't know how much he had, so.
So he's doing the math here. He says he would therefore be calling 200 to win 360 plus 200 plus 690, which equals 1250, or 1 in 6.25, or 16%.
Hmm. So what? So we have a 25% chance of boating, right? Roughly.
I don't do math.
Well, 10 outs, 44
right,
unknown cards,
so
1 in 4.
The outs that he says he has, 3 aces, 3 kings, 3 queens, 1 jack, and 3 tens minus 2 given at the end of the gun, plus 3 had called the flop, so he probably had some piece, and the end of the gun might have had another blocker in his hand.
Yeah, although we can't really do that, but whatever. I you're not really supposed to do that. So he could have had pocket fives. You have no idea what the guy had. So you can't do that. So, I don't know. I'd say we have about a 22% chance.
Well, you're right. You can't do that, but it's not harmful. I mean, it's more conservative to do it this way.
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you want to be conservative. But really, it's just not the way to figure out. It's just not. I mean, you, how do you say, oh, when one breath, say, a flush draw is 9 outs, but somebody could have folded a couple of hearts because they looked at the flop long enough that they, I've deduced that they have a heart in their hand, and so I'm counting those as
well,
and I can't do that.
But you know, we all make our own calculations. Some people are willing to give themselves more outs than they probably should, and in this particular case, our hero wants to give himself fewer outs just to and do the math.
Right.
So, you know, it may not be proper, but you know, the only thing that's proper in poker is what works for us.
All right. Well, I'm counting the kings as outs too. Did he count the kings?
Yeah, well, he said three kings.
He did say that, okay. Yeah, so that, yeah, to me, I think we have about 24-25% chance to win the hand. And we're getting 16% as implied odds, so that's close enough for me to make the call. I'm happy with the call.
All right, well, he continued his calculation to determine that he has 8 outs to win, 3 outs to chop. Because he couldn't do very complicated math in his head to calculate EV. So he just simplified it to 11 outs with 46 unseen cards, 35-11, or 3.2-1, which gives him the correct pot odds.
I don't know.
Next week's show, Scott and Chris talk about pot odds.
Well, I'm just saying that 46 unseen cards is right, and whatever, and all the things that his reasoning is whatever he's using, so that's fine,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But I'm not saying that it's concrete. But to me, it's enough that if I can win $1,200 in this pot, it's worth calling 200 to try to make a boat.
You just simplified it.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right, so obviously he decided he had the right odds, so he calls. And he says he's prepared to fold instantly if he bricks. But the river is a beautiful queen of spades.
Mm-hmm. Can't be happier than that unless it's a jack. A jack, I guess, makes you happier, but... Yeah, that's awesome. We got paid off.
You do get happier because the under the gun instantly ships, and of course we call. Our opponent showed King 10 offsuit.
King 10. Well, that was the thing we said before, a pair and a draw, but I don't know if I call $80 with bottom pair on that, where the action went with the gut shot and bottom pair. I don't know if I can call $80 with that.
I know, I couldn't. But again, I don't play in games like this.
Yeah, I know.
I purposely avoid these games. I know you said you like them, but me, as soon as I find them, I'm in the middle of a game like this. For the most part, I get out. I mean, I guess this game is a lot like the game I played down in the Dominican Republic, and I actually enjoyed it there. But on a daily basis, I don't have the stomach or the heart.
Yeah, it's tough.
For a game this crazy. I'd much rather have one that's a little more chess-like.
I usually ratchet up my tightness when I play in games like this, and then just punish the straddlers who do shit like that or whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's obviously what our hero is doing here, is playing a very tight, aggressive game.
And it's working.
Yeah, and he got the guy to call him with the straight.
Well, it's always nice when one of your 10 outs gets there and you get paid off, so nice job. He won so much money in this night, I don't want to give him anything.
All right, well, same under. See, I want to try to get it right.
Simon.
Yeah, I've already said Simon. I took the easy way out a couple times. So. Same under. We appreciate you sending in the hand all the way from Iceland. And we will send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. I don't know if it has crazy setting on that or not, but let us know when you get it.
I like when you say all the way from Iceland, like he had to lug it over by ship. And then, you know, get on a pony and deliver it to his hand, but still, it is cool to have someone from Iceland send it in a hand a week.
Well, it probably took
that.
4 seconds to get here rather than 1 second. It's an eternity in the internet.
Well, I want to thank Button Girl from Wales for giving us a really cool topic and giving us something to think about. Maybe we'll start revisiting other topics to help the streak stay alive. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. Usually it's, hey, give me 5 minutes while I go tinkle and grab a bite to eat and I'm started something, so I'm not used to just coming right on saying, let's roll.
Yeah, but you sent that at 10:54.
I know. So you took your minute to tinkle and just didn't tell me.
Yeah, I did all my pregame preparations just without telling you I was going to do them.
I wasn't expecting that at all, man. I was like, I'll tell them 5 minutes early so we can get actually ready at 11 o'clock.
You can actually do it on time.